Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. 1-800-449-8255 from anywhere in the United States of America and the United Kingdom. So, what caused the stock market to lurch yesterday and lose $1 trillion in value? I was the first one to say, you know, guessing, sabotage. No one agreed with me yesterday, but today, oh, now the White House is saying it might have been sabotage. Well, let me ask you, the audience of the Savage Nation, given that it might have been sabotage, who might have sabotaged the stock market and why? There are many possibilities. My first intuitive guess yesterday was, hey, maybe it's our friends in China. Why? A, because they have superior hacking capacity. Number two, they have been pressured recently to alter the value of their currency, the yuan. And so they're saying, okay, you want to pressure us? We'll show you what we could do. Not only do we hold all of your T-bills, your treasury bills, we own all your debt, but we'll also manipulate your stock market anytime we want, get off our back. That's a possibility. Now let's look at the crisis in Greece, if you want some answers before you want to get into trivial stuff like why was the Labradoodle bred and was it a mistake? The fact of the matter is what's happening in Greece is going to happen all through the Western nations. Why? Why? Because people are living longer, because unlimited health care for everybody is unaffordable in any country. Even though Obama pushed it through, everyone knows it's going to bankrupt America even further. The pensions are unfundable. The fat pensions that city workers, state workers, federal workers are supposed to get will never be paid out because nobody has the money for them. And you can only have so many bailouts. You can have only so many economic stimulus packages. The fact of the matter is these are unsustainable pensions and unsustainable health care graphs. And so, therefore, you have an aging population. You don't have enough young people coming into the workforce. Most young people either don't work or don't want to work, by the way. And so, therefore, it's over. And what's going to happen is very simple. It's not like the end of the world. You know, people say, oh, the world's coming to an end. No, the world as you know it is coming to an end. The world of milk and honey is coming to an end. The world of unlimited gravy is coming to an end. And you're going to live more like your father did it or your grandfather. That's all. You're not going to go back to the dark ages. Instead of having four cars, you'll have one car. Instead of taking five vacations a year, you'll take one to Disneyland instead of four to Acapulco. It's safer for you anyway. I could go down the list. I mean, life was a lot simpler in America in the 1950s when I grew up, and no one seemed to have died from deprivation from having one car and going on one simple vacation and not eating out 7 nights a week or 14 times a week. So there are many things that are going to have to happen. In other words, it's called belt tightening. You know, that's all there is to it. Now let's move on. We could talk about the Labradoodle and what an error it was. How mixing the great poodle breed with all these other dogs has decimated the poodle, the poor poodle. And I have a real poodle. I call him a poo poodle. But there it is. Now don't talk about the poodle. We can talk about immigration again. I mean, how do you deal with that subject over and over again? How do you deal with the fact that everybody knows that they don't all come here to work? Now, it is true that the people we see working are by and large from south of the border. The actual manual labor jobs are all being done by people south of the border. That's a given, and we respect that. We're a nation that respects work. But on the other hand, what you don't see are the silent immigrants, the women sitting at home knocking out babies like loaves of bread for welfare, the one out of three illegal the one out of three prisoners who's an illegal alien. You don't see that. The death of hospitals and schools because of the cost. So, you know, you have to see the whole picture, not just a snapshot of the hardworking person from the south of the border. That's all. Now, the politicians are not in sync with the people. We know that. So, again, don't call me on this. We've covered it over and over and over again. You want to go back to the vermin in the media again with white male? Or would you like to talk about the fact that a Muslim male did it? And the media is still saying white male. I mean, how do you want to deal with that? Or how about a soundbite from Nancy Pelosi? She popped out from the hidden reaches of the world, and she was asked about illegal drugs from Mexico. Listen to clip 12.
The Justice Department has reported that one in five teenagers used illicit drugs last year, and that most of those drugs came across the border from Mexico. Mm-hmm. Are you committed to sealing the border against the influx of illegal drugs?
Well, if your question is about drugs, I'm for reducing demand in the United States. That is what our responsibility is on this subject.
Did you hear what she just said? She's for reducing the demand in the United States, but she's in favor of the illegals bringing it across the border? Did you actually hear what she just said? Listen to this. Listen. Some reporter with guts actually asks Pelosi about the illegal drugs flowing in. And Pelosi, instead of saying, I'm against illegal drugs coming in, has the gall to say that she wants to reduce demand for illegal drugs in the U.S. It gets worse. Listen to 13.
We have a responsibility to secure our border. But I don't know what you mean by seal. And I think sealing the border doesn't do a whole lot to reduce demand in the United States. As I travel the country, I know that kids are on meth and they can make it in their bathtub.
Did you? So she's covering for drug dealers. I mean, this is sickening. It's sickening. She's implying that more meth is made in bathtubs than is smuggled in from Mexico. Ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. I have nothing more to say. We don't just have a debt crisis. We don't just have a Greek crisis. We don't just have a crisis of confidence. We have a crisis from top to bottom. It's unbelievable to me. Chicago, Anthony, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I treat your show like a classroom. I literally every day rely on your show. And I got to tell you, since it's Rock and Roll Friday, you hit every point every day this week. I loved it. And if you can crank some Rammstein, I would really appreciate it.
If you could create who?
If you can crank some Rammstein for a Rock and Roll Friday, that would be great.
Oh, which one do you like? Du Hast? Or do you don't know?
The one you always play when you say play
Rammstein. Well, where are you now that you'd like to hear some Rammstein? Where are you, in a car?
I'm in my vehicle, yes, sir.
And what are you doing that you'd like to hear such music?
I'm just listening to your show, getting ready to go home and put you out of my house. I've been listening to you for 10 years.
Does your wife permit you to listen to me in the house, or do you have to sneak in the bathroom with a portable?
Well, I'm not married, so I don't have to worry about that. But
thank God. I mean, thank God for you. All right. I'm sorry. last night, I live in a small town part-time, so I see six fire trucks. The show is over. I come home. Six fire trucks, police cars, police action, cops running back and forth, the streets closed off. I'm looking. I don't know what's going on. The firemen are running. The police are running. So I got the dog. I walked down the street with Teddy, and I inquire what happened. Apparently, it was a kitchen fire that my mother would have put out with a bottle of seltzer. Six fire trucks, six police cars, the street closed off. So I jokingly said to my neighbors, well, I mean, they came from four different surrounding towns. I'm not kidding you. A kitchen fire that you could have put out with a glass of water. Two punks living there with their mother, apparently. They could have doused it out with a bottle of soda. Four trucks or six trucks and sirens, and the street closed down. Three departments. They all came running because they can write it on the books that they went to put out a fire. So I said to the neighbor, I guess they've justified their pensions here. So they laughed. You think people don't know what's going on? I mean, you think people are stupid? This is not to denigrate the individual fireman or the individual cop. But we all know that the pensions are unsupportable. We all understand that. And we all understand that civil service jobs today are golden. They're the golden jobs of America today. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bestrafe mich.
bestrafe mich. Stroh wird Gold und Gold wird Stein. Deine Größe macht
deine
mich
Größe.
Klein. Du darfst mein Bestrafer sein. Ja.
It is the Savage Nation. So we're talking about the Greeks. The Greeks. And the Greeks again. It's all about the Greeks. They started the Western civilization. They're liable to end it. I like that. That's kind of a nice coupling. I mean, Western civilization began in Greece. It's liable to end in Greece. Now, what are the riots about? What are they burning and setting banks on fire, killing a pregnant woman in a bank? Look at the actual details of the Greek austerity plan. And it's, if you look at it, it's not a big deal. Let's start with pensions. Pensions will be cut to reflect a pensioner's average pay over the entire working life rather than his or her final salary level. I agree with that. We all know that there are people scamming the system, especially cops, who in their final year, they'll work 110% of the year, then they'll get a fake heart attack, which they claim was work-related, even though they put on 50, 60 pounds in the last 3 months, and then they'll scream that it was related to them, and then they pay no tax on their pension. It's grotesque. You know, it's scamming the system. It's like criminality. The retirement age, currently 65 years for men and 60 years for women, will change. Minimum contribution period to qualify for full pension will be gradually increased to 40 years from 37. Early retirement curtailed with a view to banning any retirement below the age of 60. I'm over 60. I'm still working. What do you have to quit for? What are you going to do, go to Disneyland and go gambling at an Indian casino? I don't understand what people work their whole life to retire and then do what? What do they do with themselves? For the life of, maybe there's something wrong with me that I like to work. There are days I'd rather not. I mean, there are days I like to sleep in the afternoon instead of working. Then I would say, that's what you want to do with the rest of your life, is sleep in the afternoon? You don't want to have an impact? You don't want to make a it's like I'm my mother's talking to me from heaven the way she used to get me up to go to school when I was a kid. I hated school. I hated it, and I stayed in it forever. A bachelor's degree, two master's degrees, a real PhD as opposed to a fake one. But, you know, I was driven. My mother used to have to cajole me out of bed. I didn't want to go to school. From Monday to Friday was a struggle. Monday, she didn't even give me a story. Just basically get up, you lazy kid, and go to school. Tuesday, she would say, Wednesday's almost here. Wednesday, she would say, it's only today, tomorrow, and Friday. She was great. By Wednesday already, she was like, it was the weekend, and it's only today, tomorrow, and Friday. But it worked for me. I saw hope. Even though I worked on the weekend for my father, it didn't matter. It wasn't horrible school with teachers with bad toilet water. I got migraines from the teachers in the grade school. It's where I developed my allergies. The toilet water, they didn't call it cologne then. Toilet water, they called it. You could die from it. Don't get me into pictures that I still have in my head with the teachers. They'd be arrested today for salaciousness. You have no idea. They'd sit in the desk with, okay, I can't say it's a family show. There were no, half the people were nuts in the teaching profession to begin with. What do you think? It just began yesterday. Who else works around children but people who are a little, either they're idealists or they're nuts altogether. I remember when I became a teacher, they said to me, when I was a young teacher, they said to me, in this profession, either you're dedicated or you're demented. And the guy who said it to me was the demented type. But anyway, look, it's a tough world. So mom would say, yeah, Wednesday, today, tomorrow, Friday. I keep working. I'm a conditioned worker. What do you do if you retire? Tell me how you know, that's not a bad topic. Why do people work their whole life to be retired? What do they do? How much wine can you drink? How many dinners can you gorge stuff down your throat? What are you doing with yourself? Golf, I don't understand. If you like it, God bless you. I myself don't understand it. I'm an inner city kid. To me, golf was one thing. Tennis, I never understood. There were kids from my background who skied, played golf, and played tennis. I wasn't one of them. I did not. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not knocking it. I'm trying to be neutral about it. I always found golf to be too slow for me. I know it's a game of skill. Don't get me wrong. I have family members who play it. It's not an easy game. I'm not knocking it. I don't like it. It's boring. Tennis, too slow for my mind. I don't get it. Again, great skill, but too slow for my mind. What do you do in retirement? And how much golf can you play? How much tennis can you play? How much boating can you? Every day, 7 days a week, you're going to sit on a boat and get drunk? That's your idea of a retirement? I don't understand why people work their whole lives for retirement. And many people drop dead 2 years later, by the way. The guy works his whole life. He retires and he drops dead. The woman lives for 35 more years. I don't understand that part of it. They say it's genetic, and it may be. It could be that testosterone kills men. You know, that's a given. So as I said yesterday, I was in the street yesterday with the kitchen fire that took four trucks and eight police cars to put out. Well, my mother would have put it out with a seltzer bottle. But talking to some of the neighbors who I never run into, nice people. I didn't even know they lived there. They listened to the show. I thought it was all liberals. So one thing leads to another. The guy says to me, you know, sometimes I listen to you on the radio. I'm afraid for you that you're going to die on the air. You're going to get a stroke. He said, you got so mad. So I said, well, I rarely hit that point anymore. I said, last week, though, I almost blew out an artery yes, last week. I felt it. I know the day. It was Tuesday. It was an immigration show. I started to yell. I started to scream. I blew it. I felt the toxins release inside my head. We're in another, you know, but for the stroke of God there. I mean, I would have been on the floor already with the 911. But see, he says, well, it must be genetic. I said, yeah. I got great genetics. Sure, that's why I'm still able to do it, am I? Sure. It's genetics. Let's see. Dad, may rest in peace, had a heart attack at 49 and died at 57. Oh, your grandfather. Yeah, he died at 49. I said, oh, the great-grandfather in Europe, I used to ask. He lived to 39. Yeah, so it's genetics. Sure, it's not genetics. It's not genetics. I mean, my mother lived to 88. God bless her. But how do you figure these things out? Genetics are about one-third of the pie. What you eat, what you don't eat, what vitamins you take, et cetera, is another one-third. And the other third is the psychology of your whether you want to live or die and how you can relax. Can you relax or not? I also said to him, I laugh a lot. He said, I know, I hear that. To me, laughter is one of the great keys. As angry as I can get, if you can still laugh at it all, if you can laugh at Barack Obama, you're pretty sane, I'll tell you that. If you can laugh at what this man is doing to the country, it reminds me of another childhood story I was going to start the show with today. Remember when you were a kid, people would say to me, what do you want to be when you grow up? I look at people with their little kids, and I wonder, do fathers still say, like the uncles would, and what they look down at me, what do you want to be when you grow up? They forced you to think about it. Did anyone say they wanted to be a Leninist who ran America?
Savage.
Hey, la, dee, ding, dong, la, lang, la, lang, la, lang, boom, ba, lo, ba, do, ba, do, ba, bay.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you.
You know, it's funny. I stumbled on a topic because you're talking about the Greek austerity plan. They don't want to retire. I mean, they want to retire early. They don't want to work. And I'm the opposite. I could retire. I could have retired. I don't want to retire. And because I don't know what would I do with myself day in and day out. I have a pattern. It's a struggle sometimes, but truthfully, by the time I get on the air, I actually love it, and I sail through the hours on the radio, and it gives me great relief to be able to be doing something very useful, pointing out the hateful administration that we have. And I was saying, do people still say to a little child, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because when I was a kid, that was a major league question. The uncles, the father's friends, they leaned down. I couldn't have been four. What do you want to be when you grow up? They start with me when I was three. The work ethic has to be, you know, instilled in a child. It doesn't come out of the air. It doesn't come by spontaneous combustion, so to speak. You don't get it out of the air. A child has to be taught that work is beautiful, that work is essential, that work is the essence of living. Now, if you are a Greek where leisure is the essence of living, then we have nothing to talk about. The Greek society is very interesting. I mean, it's probably part of my background. But the Hellenists were fundamentally leisure-oriented. They were oriented towards beauty. There's nothing wrong with leisure or beauty. I understand that. But as a be-all and an end-all of existence, it's not enough for me. As a side job, fine. I mean, you can be a worker and still love beauty. You can pursue beauty. You can see beauty. You can steep yourself in beautiful music and beautiful art and beautiful poetry and beautiful flowers, if you wish, as I do. But the fact of the matter is to devote your whole life to beauty is, to me, already on the other side of the coin. So let me get back to the kids. So they say to a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? So kids start out with, I want to be an astronaut. There was a time that a kid would say that. Or I want to be a baseball star. I want to be like, pick your favorite baseball star. Or I want to be like a football star, whoever. Now, I don't know what kids would say today. But you look at the role models that the vermin in the media hold up every day, each and every day. Who are the role models for our children today? It's one drug addict, one deviant, one anti-American slimeball after another. I don't even know who a kid holds up as a role model anymore. But I really don't think that there was a kid somewhere in Indonesia, you know, 40-odd years ago who said, when I grow up, I want to be the first Leninist president of the United States of America. I don't really believe that. People would say, I want to be the president of the United States of America. That I understand. I mean, I never said that. I never thought that that was possible. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We also talked about who was behind the market drop, the precipitous drop in the market. We could talk about all the other stuff from the week. I mean, there's a big week. What a big week. The government failed us again with the Times Square bomber, and Napolitano is not retired. A reporter asks Pelosi about closing the borders because of the drugs, and she says, well, I don't care about... She didn't say... She said, I believe we got to stop the demand for drugs. The demand, but she has nothing to do with securing the border. Come on. Come on. Are you kidding me? That's unbelievable. Are you kidding me? What else do we have? ABC's Diane Sawyer. What a nut she is. Isn't she the lady friend of Oprah, according to one rumor? Well, that's irrelevant. Just shows bad taste, that's all. I mean, that's all. It's the only reason I pointed out. But Diane Sawyer reporting on Times Square suspect Shahzad as a guy with Spartan existence? Come on. You're kidding me. She's holding him up as a hop-along. Let's hear clip 19. This is lunatic.
We also had a look inside his life, thanks to photographer Robert Kalpas, who went into his apartment after police finished their search. You can see it's a Spartan existence, a bare kitchen. There were Oreos there, a shelf with the George...
All right, turn it on. This is enough. It's nauseating. Just, you could throw up from her. Throw up from her. British Home Secretary and MP Jackie Smith gets thrown out. You realize what a victory that is for me personally? She was disgraced because of what she did to me. So even her own district, she was fired last year as Home Secretary. Now, to top it all off, this loser in England gets fired completely and thrown out of her own seat. Listen to clip 22.
It's a good thing to take part in an election when you fear you're going to lose, as well as when you hope you're going to win. It's an immense honour to have served the people of the Old Redditch constituency for the last 13 years. And I'm obviously sad that that's come to an end tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure you're awfully sad. What are you going to do for a living now? You build your husband's porno to the people of your district. That's why you got thrown out. You know, maybe you can consider going into the adult entertainment business since you and your husband know so much about it. Let's see. Here's CBS's lunatic Bob Orr reporting on the Times Square bomber. Shahzad as a lonely guy. Listen to 20 and 21.
Shahzad claims he's angry about U.S. predator attacks on Pakistan, but investigators say financial pressures may have helped fuel his rage. Sources tell CBS News he defaulted on both his mortgage and another $65,000 equity loan. In video taken just after the FBI raid of Shahzad's Connecticut apartment, shows the 30-year-old Pakistani-American man lived a Spartan and seemingly lonely existence. A weight bench that passed for furniture, a collection of art supplies, a largely empty kitchen with a solitary plant on the counter, and in the bedroom, a rumpled air mattress on the floor.
What a schmuck you are, Bob. Bob, did you come from an American family, or were you hatched out of an ostrich egg? Is there something wrong with the people who work for CBS and ABC? Is there something actually beyond liberalism as a mental disorder that this schmuck could run a thing to try to have sympathy for a guy who tried to kill thousands in Times Square? Financial pressures turned him into a mad Muslim bomber. Are you crazy? I've had financial pressures. I never set off bombs. I got angry, but I didn't set off bombs and go to kill people. I went and found a better job. I went back to school and got a higher degree, you stupid moron, you. You don't go and kill people because you lose your job. I've lost jobs. Oh, my goodness, what a country we're living in. Most of what has happened to this country is a result of the major media. Almost everything that has happened to this nation that's bad is a result of the vermin in the mainstream media. Do you know that? Tom in Washington, D.C., welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Michael, you're the greatest in talk radio. I want to echo that. Please take care of your health, but I have to tell you that when you get up on that rage, it's great. For me, anyway, because I had a 32-year career in the government, and I had to shut my mouth all the time, and I feel bad about that.
So, in other words, I speak for you. You live through me.
Absolutely, Michael. And Michael, God bless you so much. You're the very, very best, Michael.
Well, I don't know if you really mean it, but I appreciate it if it's heartfelt.
It is, Mike.
All right, I work at it. A lot of people actually mean it, by the way. San Francisco, Phil, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Phil?
Yeah, listen, Michael, what you said about retirement a while ago, I gotta tell you, I firmly believe that man is not meant to retire. I don't think God created us to retire. I think we're supposed to maybe change gears, you know, slow down, maybe give a little bit, but not to just quit work and sit on our duffs.
I don't understand why people look forward to that. I can't imagine doing that. Phil, do you know anyone who's happily retired?
No, I don't. Everybody I know that's retired is doing other things. You know, they're working at some charity or they're giving some time because they just get... They get nuts sitting around watching TV all the time or going fishing every day.
Yes, exactly. In other words, for 2 months or so, they think it's paradise to sleep in and to go fishing or whatever it is they do. And then they don't know what to do with themselves.
And they find and they got to do something else.
You know what I find amazing is that couples that are together very long, usually if one dies, the other dies within a few months of the other. I've always found that to be very odd.
They happen to my in-laws. That happened to my wife's folks. My mother-in-law died in January 1 year, and then the father-in-law was 2 years later.
Because they're lost. They're like a ship without a rudder. They have no one to yell at them.
Yeah.
If the wife goes first, usually the husband doesn't know what to do with himself because there's no one to scream at him.
And he was. He was lost. He truly was lost.
He had no one pushing him around all day long, telling him to do this. A lot of guys become like little boys. They need a mother around all over again. You know, I used to love that. I never understood it. We never did it in my family. There was like a Midwestern thing where they would call each other mother and father. I found that icky when the wife would say, "Father, what do you think about?" And he would look at her and say, "Mother." Was that actually done or was that in Mickey Rooney movies only?
No, my in-laws used to do that. They'd say they call each other mom and pop.
Kinda well, like, why? I mean, how could you ever sleep with a person that you call mom?
I mean,
think about that one. You start calling your wife mom, and then you're going to go to bed with her, and how can you? It's impossible. No, I don't understand that part of it. I never understood the mom and the mother and father thing. I mean, it seemed very sweet. But definitely not for my people. We never had the mother and father thing. Play some rock and roll for me right now. Let's pick the show up with something a little spicier than... That's spicy to you, Sam Cooke? All right.
I know you send me, darling, you.
I know guys still go to dances like they're 17 years old. I think about that. Stop the music. I was thinking about that as well today. Like a lot of guys, they don't change at all their whole life. Like at 17, they used to go to the Palladium Ballroom of Manhattan to listen to Latin music, okay? Ages 17 through 20, 21. Then they had to make a living. So they went on, blah, blah. Now the guy is like 60-something. He's still going out to Latin dances, still trying to pick up chicks. I don't understand it. I can't understand how a person 60 years later, 50 years later, could do the same thing. It's true he's divorced, but I don't understand it. How can you do that? How do you keep doing a thing like that? What do you think about a man 82 years old who's still dating women? Never married, he dates women 30, 35, 40. You say, well, they're not with him for his body. I mean, he knows what he's with, what they're with him for. I'm not naming names. Do you think that it's something to admire in a man or is something to revile? A guy at 80 who's still dating women and looking to have sex constantly, 24/7. I mean, is that something to admire or is that something to like pity? Is that a sign of health or a sign of illness? There's a lot of questions in my mind that are like rolling around lately in my head about people that in the past, I never would have second-guessed these things. I would have assumed anyone in his 80s who's still dating and having sex is a healthy man. Well, certainly he's healthier than a guy who died at 59 of a heart attack or a stroke. That's a given. But that's not what I say. Like, there's got to be another alternative to being 80 and running after women chasing skirts. Isn't there or not? They say, well, why am I talking about it when there's so many problems in the world? Because there are so many problems in the world. That is why I'm talking about it. That's why. I find this a great release. Or should I do the white male again? White male, white male, white male, white male, white male, white male, white male. How about Janet Napolitano again? You had enough of that? We've played the sound. We've had fun with it. We've already told you what the Greek austerity plan. It's nothing. Nothing. Pete in New York, thanks for calling. Pete, your father loved retirement, according to the board?
Retired at 63 and a half. lived till 90, loved every minute of it. Couldn't wait.
Okay, good, good. I'm glad you called. What did he do?
He was a grocer. He ran a grocery store, lived through the Depression, fought Rommel's army in northern Africa, an incredible patriot. But he worked since he was 16 years old, hated it, and he just sat in the living room reading the paper, railing about politics.
So in other words, if they had given him a microphone and he could actually sustain it, he would have been a good talk show host.
He would have been Michael Savage, 90 years old.
No, a lot of people think that I just get up here and talk what I think, and I do in a way, but on the other hand, it's built upon a mountain of preparation. But nevertheless, that's okay. You're not supposed to show people the sweat. You know, you're supposed to be Will Rogers just twirling the rope rather than showing them how you suffered to learn how to twirl the rope. But he did rail against politics, in other words, anyway.
He was a lifelong Democrat, but before he died, he warned me. He said there's something about Obama I don't like, something about him I didn't trust. Now, this is a Jewish Democrat his whole life, a union guy. He couldn't stand him. He thought he was a Muslim, and he wouldn't trust him and wouldn't vote for him.
So who did he vote for?
He voted for McCain.
He voted for Tom McCann, the shoe salesman.
And he didn't like McCain at all.
Noel, he sounds very much like me in many ways. He knew that McCain was a Bush too, but he didn't trust Obama at all, and he turned out to be right about that. But the main point is that he retired and he did nothing?
He played golf once a week and read the newspaper, washed the engine of his car, detailed every aspect of his life, kept his tools in order.
Oh, one of those old men garages. I love those.
Oh,
I mean the pegboard. I mean, that's something to aspire to, the pegboard with the wrenches. Are you kidding me?
The pegboard is still there. It's a monument to him. And my mother keeps calling me saying, I got to get rid of this. And I said, Ma.
No. I know how you feel about it. When my dad died, I'm talking a long time ago, we had a little attached house in Queens. He had a workbench. I don't know how he got it down in that basement. It must have been from 1910, all wood, with a built-in vise, tools that you can't imagine. You could take apart a boiler with it. Tools that would be, I think, museum pieces today. I have some of them. To this day, I won't get rid of them. How could you get rid of your father's tools? You should keep a few of them.
I have brought some to my house. We had the same. We lived on Jewel Avenue and 174th Street. We had the same thing in the basement there. It was absolutely a fastidious little workshop that he built into the attachment.
So your father was the type who could jack a car up and change a broken bearing in a crankshaft, probably on the highway.
Never did his never got an oil change. Always did it himself. Never hired anyone to put a battery in. Everything he did.
But hold it. This is what I was talking about earlier. People say the world is coming to an end because they have to tighten their belts. That's the kind of life that people are going to have to start living again very soon. In other words, they're going to have to learn how to be handy up to a certain point all over again. What is wrong with that? What is wrong with being able to take care of certain things yourself?
He used to tell me, he said, people are worried that their house won't be worth $500,000 or $400,000. He says, what happens when it's worth $50,000?
Yeah. See, he was a pessimist like me. He always expected the crash any day. All through the 70s when the houses were going up and his friends were buying and selling and making a fortune, he was saying they're crazy. It's going to crash any minute. I guarantee you he was saying that.
He wouldn't put a dime into any mutual fund.
Oh, God.
Every penny went into U.S. savings bonds.
One last question because I'm curious. He fought with Patton in the tank corps or what?
He walked alongside the tanks. He was a private first class. He walked in the Libyan desert. He fought Rommel's tanks. And he was hit. They saw a German plane coming overhead, and they saw the bomb bay doors open. He ran for cover, but there were already so many soldiers under the rock that he was actually hit by the bomb. He saw his buddies blown up. He came back to Walter Reed with an honorable discharge and began his career managing a grocery store.
Which grocery store? I bet I used to shop in it.
Well, not unless you were in Fort Washington, 173rd Street Food Court in the Bronx, in Fort Washington. Broadway.
No, I hadn't been up there in 50 years. All right, God bless him. Thanks, Pete. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said.
were talking about the Greek austerity deal with the EU. They're getting all the bailout money, but they don't want to give up anything in return. Bonuses, salaries, pensions, etc. They want what they have, and they don't want to give it up. So then it led us to talking about retirement, and I said I don't know what I would do in retirement. I could have retired a while ago. I don't want to. I've worked, believe me, I've worked more than five men in my life, but I keep working. I'm not looking for a merit badge in the next world. I don't understand how people could retire. I don't know what they do with themselves. Now, it could be a product, actually, of the poverty of my upbringing that has led me to this state where I don't know what to do with myself if I retired. I mean, I know for many years I knew how to read a book and read books for 20 years, and I wrote many books, and I still write many books. I could do that as well, but is that retiring? Of course not. What do? Put your mind on retire? You put it to sleep? You know, for a couple of years, about 5 years, I worked in the Alzheimer's disease research area. I wrote one book on it, Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. I was a fascinating field at the time. I was one of the first popular health writers to posit the relationship between antioxidants and reducing the onset of Alzheimer's. Now it's quite popular as a concept, which I think it makes sense to do. But I was 20 years ahead of the time with that as well. But one of the things I discovered in my reading and research was that the active mind is a mind that rarely falls into that state. It doesn't mean that people who get Alzheimer's are all inactive. I didn't say that. But they say one of the greatest methods of maintaining your memory is to constantly exercise your brain. Think about that one.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Just been told that part of Times Square, that the traffic has been shut down due to a suspicious package.
There in front of the Marriott Marquis, what is going on?
We've been told that there's a suspicious package by the Marriott Marquis.
This appears to be, I'm not sure this is Times Square. This is Times Square, that's right. This is Times Square.
Tensions are very high in New York City right now in Times Square.
All right, that was earlier when the nervous Nellies are already in the media, when they're freaking out over someone left a lunchbox in the gutter. That's America today. Someone leaves a lunchbox, they all have, they call 911. Unbelievable to me what a country. Play some rock and roll, would you please, as we begin this hour, the nervous Nellies of the media. Try to set off another panic. Well, there's good news and modestly good news out of England. The good news is that some of the worst vermin in the West have lost their filthy seats. Jackie Smith, who put me on the list with murderers and terrorists, was thrown out of her own district. George Galloway, the terrorist-loving vermin from London, was thrown out of his seat. You won't read that in your local paper. Galloway, the lover of the Palestinian murderers, was thrown out on his behind. He lost his seat in Parliament and didn't even turn up to hear the result. Now, it is a hung Parliament, but in a way it's a well-hung Parliament because it leans towards the conservative side. That's the only good news coming out of England. Whether the alliance that the conservatives are going to have to make with either the Lib Dems or the slimy labor socialists will result in any change is another story. The good news, two of the slimiest creatures in British political history have been thrown out. George Galloway, a terrorist lover, thrown out of his own hometown seat, and Jackie Smith now thrown out of her hometown seat. She'll have to get a real job probably in the adult entertainment area. This is the Savage Nation. We're open for business. We're talking about the Wall Street meltdown, and my conspiracy theory is that it could have been a nation such as China sending a warning shot across the bow of America for trying to force China to to change its currency value. Let's put it to you that way, okay? And so I don't say they did it. How would I know? But we know that they have phenomenal hacking skills. And we know that most of the people in our intelligence services are busy reading EEOC bulletins rather than trying to stop the next terror attack. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. And pensions, we're talking about retirement. Big deal. And I say, I don't know how to retire. I don't know what I would do with myself. I could write another book. Big deal. I mean, my book coming out in September is probably going to be my last book, my last political book. I know it's going to be a New York Times bestseller. It'll be in the top 10. I'm sure of it. If you took all of my books together, and I'm not here to talk about them, this is the sine qua non of all the books I've ever written. It's a combination of the best I've ever written in one book. And it's meant to go all the way through the 2012 elections to make sure that Obama's a one-term president. It's not a fly-by-night book, a quick shot in the pan. It's going to be a great book. But after that, I don't ever want to write another political book. So what, I retire and I sit home and I write drippy, horrendous, third-rate novels that nobody reads because I'm no longer on the radio? I mean, the funny part is that if I wanted to write a bad novel now, as some people actually have the audacity to do in the media, they're all third, fourth, fifth-rate dreck. So let's say mine would be a third-rate novel. I could sell 20, 30,000 copies of it on my website. I don't want to do that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? What's the point? Another book? What is the point of writing? As one great British wit wrote a few hundred years ago, I think it was Samuel Johnson, actually, he said that only a fool would write for anything but money. Do you remember that great line? I used to run into schmucks in San Francisco who would pretend that they were doing it because they were such geniuses and sitting in cafes living on their father's inheritance or their father's retirement. They never worked a day in their life or collecting a crazy check from the state. They all thought that they were Dostoevsky combined with the literary hero du jour in the cafes of North Beach, whoever it might have been. So finally, I used to joke with them and say, what are you writing for? What do you think? Someone's going to think you're a genius because you wrote this? I said, how much are you actually going to earn from this book? Because only 14 people are going to actually read it in the Mission District in a toilet somewhere. And they'd get mad at me. I did it to goad them. I said, well, how dare you? You're so pedestrian. I said, yeah, well, Samuel Johnson said that only a fool would write for anything but money. And what, are you going to put down Samuel Johnson, one of the great literary icons of all time? So anyway, what are you going to do with yourself? Travel? Let's talk about travel. I don't like traveling. Do you like travel? Is there anything to like about traveling? Can anyone explain to me what there is in traveling? I know when I was young, yes. I mean, I liked traveling. I hated it even when I was young, to be honest. Let me be clear. I always hated traveling. Hated it. I couldn't wait to get home to my own house. The only reason I could see for traveling is it makes you appreciate your own house more when you get home. Your own sink, your own toilet, your own refrigerator, your own pillow, your own blanket, your own window. The only reason to travel is that you come home and say, you know, this isn't so bad. The two times I almost died traveling were in Asia from food poisoning. So I will never go to Asia again. Once I almost died in Thailand. I was laying green in a bed somewhere in the Chiang Mai province in a nice hotel. I ate chicken in some filthy, I don't know, some restaurant. Okay, leave it at that. That night, need I tell you what food poisoning is like when you really get a real case of it in Thailand? Well, I turned white. I turned green. And I was sort of like moaning, take me to a hospital. Mrs. S. sat up like on a death watch all night. She said, you turned white, you turned green, you turned blue. She said, I wouldn't take you to a hospital. I feared they would remove your kidneys and toss you out in the morning outside for the dogs. So, I mean, thankfully I didn't die from that one. But food poisoning, you feel like you're going to die from it. You know, the first food I had when I recovered from the food poisoning, the first thing I ordered from the hotel when I got better the next day was a pizza. I mean, pizza's not very good in Thailand. With fresh garlic chopped on the top of it. I did after the food poisoning. Well, I knew well enough to know that the garlic is antibacterial and this and that. The next time I almost died was in Japan, would you believe it? Again chicken, again a restaurant, again almost died in the hotel. So you say, well, that's two bad experiences. It doesn't mean it's going to happen to anybody else. But that's neither here nor there. What is the joy of travel? You travel for weddings. You travel for funerals. You travel for family events. I cannot for the life of me understand. Well, all right, now, look, I live in a beautiful part of the world. Let me take that back. If you live in a bad part of the world, I can see why people like to come to San Francisco. It is a beautiful city. No question about it. The weather is magnificent. I mean, right now it's mid-60s and cool and sunny. Florida is 95 degrees and humid. You have to live behind air conditioning and you could die. You walk out of a door in Florida, you feel like you're on fire. I can't take humidity, so I understand why people travel for weather, I guess. Then they travel for sports, for sporting events, if you're a sports fan, I suppose. But if you're a different kind of person, if your life is inside your mind, and most of what you do in the world is between your head, and you really enjoy reading the news and seeing the destruction that Obama's wreaking upon the Western world, there's no place like home in front of a screen. That's all I can say. So let's take the callers. Let's go to Lee in San Francisco, 860 on the dial. Lee, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I'm worried about, Mike, who's going to take your shoes when you leave someday to fit the, your, you know, just the way you express yourself is unbelievable. The truth, you know.
I believe that my method of expressing myself is quite unique in this day and age. I do. And I believe that the model that I use of myself, who I am, is a one-off. There'll never be a reproduction of me. It's impossible. There are people who fake it with the steam fitter's voice, the longshoreman's voice, but they don't understand beneath it is a lot of education, a lot of reading, and a lot of thought. I mean, you can only fake the accent for a while, and then it's nothing. People have tried it. But everyone has their unique style in talk radio who makes it to the top. Nobody can replace me. That's why you listen to me, right? I mean, I'm a unique character.
I don't think anybody could at this point. The media is so phony out there.
I agree with you. I watch it lately. I get madder than I ever did. I have never seen a meltdown. In the last year or two, it's gotten worse than ever. I have never seen more empty suits than they have now. And skirts. Don't even tell me about the skirts. You think women have common sense? Where do they get these women from? Do they not understand it by placating the terrorists? They're digging their own grave, I say to myself every day as I watch these babes. These would-be babes, the sour jungle fruit on the jungle floor.
It's amazing.
Most of the women in the media remind me of guava that's fallen to the jungle floor that you wouldn't even consume. Let's put it to you that way. It's one thing to consume a guava that you pick that's ripe. It's another thing. Would you pick a piece of guava up off the jungle floor that's rotting?
No.
I'm sorry. All right. That's a little too graphic. We'll let it go at that. I'll be right back. Savage.
One, two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. But
so the Greeks, the lazy Greeks, are being told they're going to have to work longer and they're going to have to retire later. And the pensions are going to be cut. So they burnt the town down. But if you actually look at some of the austerity cuts, it's amazing what they're proposing here. If you look at it carefully, they pay a VAT tax in Greece of 21 points right now. Can you believe there's a 21% VAT tax on everything? And it's going to go up another 2 percentage points to 23%. That's a VAT tax on top of everything. And it'll just raise to 21 from 19 in March. Then, listen to this one. The Greeks are going to see excise taxes on fuel, cigarettes, and alcohol increased by a further 10%. That's unbelievable. They're big smokers over there, so that could be part of the reason they set things on fire. And then the government expects to generate additional revenues through more taxes on highly profitable companies. You hear this? Punish success. And higher property taxes, so-called green taxes, as well as new gambling and gaming licenses. Well, we have trouble. Everybody wants something, and they don't want to work for it. And we're going to have to understand that we're living in a fantasy world. And the world that we have to live in, I'm not saying, it's not going to have to be more or less like post-World War II Europe. No one is suggesting we're going to wind up back there where food was scarce. I don't believe we'll see that. I do believe that the late 1950s might be the era that best approximates the most that we can afford in our nations in terms of a lifestyle for the average person. 58, 59, already the affluence was set, you know, starting to come down. But it wasn't yet at a point of greediness to the point where no one thinks that this could be sustained. It was unsustainable after 1961, 62, 63. The Vietnam War changed everything. And that's a whole different story, but I'm not an economist. I'm giving you sort of a postage stamp opinion of what I think is going to be the settling point of lifestyle. So what does it actually mean? You probably own, everyone listening to this show, if you're a working person, you own 3-4 cars, if not more. Well, all right, that's nice if you can afford it. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I own many cars. But I'm not in the same category as an average person. I mean, I don't want to pretend that I'm a working man who works in a factory. I think that's one of the most disingenuous things that people in the media do, particularly people who call themselves conservatives, to not level with you. All of us are affluent. Yes, we worked for it, but we're affluent. I mean, don't lie to you, the guy who's listening to you. Make believe you're him. Then you're no different than a politician. So we're not a good model for you. But the average person, let's say, one car, maybe two cars, one vacation, eating out once a week, if you do that at all. My parents never ate out. They could have. They didn't like it. In a way, I mean, I understand that. I like restaurants up to a point, but I can't do it 3 times a day, certainly. We got used to it. It's a lifestyle. I'm not knocking the restaurant business, but all right, it's very, it's a different lifestyle. The vacations, what you wear, how much clothing do you need? How much do you spend on clothing a year? I myself spend next to nothing. For a rather affluent man, I spend nothing. It's shocking. I mean, I wear one pair of pants, two pair of pants. I can't even wear the clothing I have. I have closets of clothing. I don't wear it. I don't even, okay, if you're a salesman, you need clothing. Or if you're in an office setting, you know, it's a costume and a uniform. I understand all of these things if it's work related. Then, of course, there's the whole other realm. Do you want to dress like royalty in order to show off? That's another way to live, too. And I have nothing against that either, if that's how you see yourself in presentation of self in everyday life. If you need to wear the brocade and you need to wear the $12,000 wristwatch and it gives you pleasure, go ahead and do it. I don't. I have no jewelry on my body. I don't even like it. But you see, this is the problem with me when it comes to me as talk radio. I'm sitting here talking to you on a microphone as though I know you, you know me. But I'm projecting my worldview out to you. Does it resonate with you? It must, because the show is successful. It has been for 15, 16 years. So, I'm giving you my opinion, one man's opinion. What would be so bad if people cut back on their, let us say, ostentatiousness? Let's use a word that's hardly ever used. When have you last seen the word ostentatious used in America? I haven't seen it referred to in the last 15 years. Have you seen the word ostentatious or ostentatiousness? No. See, there are certain words that have gone out of style in a consumer-driven society. And they're better known as show-off, okay, ostentatiousness. Show off. A person who is ostentatious is a man who is a show off. But today, ostentatiousness is dampened down somewhat from, let's say, 3 years ago. Remember the phrase, if you got it, flaunt it? All right, so people who could afford it bought a Rolls Royce. Why not? It's their business. I drive a fancy car. I could drive a fancier car, but I don't. You understand everyone has what they want up to a certain point. I have possessions I don't use. I ask myself why I even have them. And, you know, that becomes another thing. You got to understand that possessions are a prison. Each possession becomes an imprisonment of its own kind. You have to maintain it. You have to care for it. You have to think about using it when you don't even want to use it. And it's an interesting phenomenon, actually. At a certain point, you need only, I don't mean a bare minimum. I'm not talking about go live like a Buddhist monk somewhere in a slum and eat a handful of dirty rice and drink you know, sewer water. I didn't say that. But the pendulum has swung so far to the side of greed and ostentatiousness, don't you think, or am I wrong? I guess from others in conservative radio, also free market, blah, blah, blah. Okay, do what you got to do. I see it another way.
Savage.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
This is not Spin City. This is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Woman who was attacked by chimp leaves hospital. Hartford, Connecticut. A Connecticut woman who lost her hands and much of her face when she was mauled by a chimp has moved from an Ohio hospital to Boston Area Assisted Living Center. I mean, this chimp really ripped her apart. Remember the 200-pounder in her friend's house? ripped off for, I don't want to go into it, horrible. So that's a horrible thing. But what's almost as grotesque is what her lawyer is now doing. Her lawyer is suing her friend for $50 million. You can almost understand that, bankrupt the friend. And now he wants to sue the state for $150 million, saying state officials failed to prevent the attack. You know, there's got to be a limit to lawyers, too. You understand that? What is he going to sue next? Abe Solomon, the lawyer. A.B. Solomon, a real prize to his people. Who's he going to sue next? The police officer who waited too long to shoot the chimp? The car maker because the lock did not work on a police door? Maybe A.B. Boyle sued the ambulance company for driving too slow? Then he could sue the city traffic department for not making all the lights in the ambulance's favor? Then he could sue the doctors and nurses for taking meal breaks in between treating her? Maybe A.B. can sue the manufacturer of the diaper that the chimp was wearing as they may have been too tight, thereby causing the chimp distress? A.B. boy, you're a real prize. You make everyone love lawyers. Yep. No wonder they say in America the streets are paved with gold. A.B., you certainly know what you're doing. Or do you? But I want to talk about tort reform for a minute, because we demanded that Obama put tort reform into the health care bill, and he wouldn't do it because he's beholden to the trial lawyers. That's a well-known fact. So was Bush, by the way. Bush tried, but, you know, the Republicans were just as owned by the trial lawyers, so no one's ever seen tort reform. But the fact is we need tort reform as much as we need tort reform, and they're almost one and the same in America today, particularly amongst certain kind of tort lawyers who are very much like the tarts that we are talking about. So let's talk about tort and tort reform for 1 minute. I have proposed for years that the model used in California be used in America. You may not know it, but liberal California, because it was almost destroyed by greedy lawyers, in 1978 passed tort reform. And lawsuits, medical malpractice lawsuits, are limited to $250,000 for pain and suffering. However, there can be damages applied, as well as pain and suffering. But these, you know, $36 million of pain and suffering, those are over. So it's $250,000. So many of the worst of the tarts left the state. Although one of them is still here that I went to a school with. He still plies his trade in some way. But that's neither here nor there. All right, so that was my position. But I've changed it somewhat. I'll tell you why. I have a friend who told me a story, and I had to apply my theory to reality, and I realized that there can't be a limit of $250,000. In every case, there has to be some other balancing factors. I'll give you an example without trying to give away the person. Told me that his daughter, he has an adult daughter, goes in for minor surgery on her knee, very minor arthroscopic surgery that should be in and out, right? A little ski injury. The doctor at one of the major teaching hospitals here in San Francisco didn't do the job right, or one of the people didn't cleanse her foot right before surgery, or the instruments were not sterilized properly. In either case, she develops a fungal infection, you know, inside the inside her foot. The foot's swelling. She goes back to the surgeon two or three times. He dismisses her, telling her not to worry, it'll go away. Meanwhile, the fungus is growing and eating away at her bone. Long and short of it, within a few months, it eats away her bone. She has to have a bone transplant to replace the bone in her foot. She lost her profession, or is losing a profession, because she's debilitated from it. And he goes to the lawyers who say to him, it's not enough money for me to even take the case. Now, I got to say to you, to me, a case like this should be worth millions and millions of dollars of medical malpractice. The girl was clearly injured. This lady was injured by the doctor's malpractice. She was injured by the hospital. And so you can't say $250,000 is the correct limit in every case. So I have to revise my viewpoint and come to some other conclusion. On the other hand, we know the excesses that these greedy tarts have gotten out of the system, and we don't know where the limits should be. So you see, as I said to you, I'm willing to revise my positions on many things when reality sometimes confronts theory. And there, I've just done it for you. I told you that I'm usually right on things, or I wouldn't last in this business. But I'm not always right. And sometimes you have to temper your theories or your ideas in politics or anything else with reality. So there's a change of it. I'll have to formulate what limits might be realistic, or how do you adjust for cases like this without permitting the greedy lawyers to go haywire again and have limits, no limits whatsoever on pain and suffering. You have to agree the pain and suffering is real, you know. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. Again, not directly related, but there we are. I mean, these are things that come up. Let's see what else I want to tell you today. Throw in the basket of thinking out there for you folks to think about over the weekend. Today I was having a power lunch in a taqueria. Again, I was eating at one of the best restaurants in town, a takeout taqueria. It's actually a chain. It has decent food. And eating alone, again, a power lunch by myself, because to me the most powerful lunch is to sit alone and not be bothered and be able to use my imagination. That's my idea of a power lunch. So I'm having the power lunch in the burrito. I don't know what it was I ate. No cheese, no whatever. And mainly it was filled with women and children in there, the screaming and the yelling and the children. I couldn't take the noise. I took it outside to eat my shrimp taco, which was delicious, by the way. And I start to think about life. You know, you think about children, and you think about what are they putting in the children's heads? Who are their role models? And it reminded me almost of my whole childhood, and I thought back again to what I started the show with today. I see little boys 3-4 years old with their mother, or little girls, and I say, does anyone say to them, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because I remember that's what they would say to me. The fathers, the friends, the family, that they'd get down on their knees, look at me and say, hi, Michael, how are you? What do you want to be when you grow up? In other words, they were conditioning me to become a useful citizen. Do people do that with children anymore? Or what, the liberal psychologists have led you to believe that rushes a child? Give them time to develop? You know what they mean by give them time to develop, don't you? You have to fill in the blanks? Give them time to develop. No, don't give him time to develop. Start to condition his development. It'll be better for him if you start to condition his development instead of giving him time to develop. I mean, you got to make him real, too. A kid says he wants to be the president. You say you can't be president because you're an American citizen. You can't be a president anymore if you're an American citizen. You have to come from another country and be able to bring in money from Saudi Arabia and Palestinians in order to become president. But all kidding aside, you let the child, when he's young enough, say whatever he wants. You know, whatever he wants to be. I'm a famous ball player or this or that. Let him have dreams. Then slowly but surely, you know, he'll learn that he can't be a major league player. He'll learn he can't be a football player. Where did this concept come that he could be anything he wants to be? Don't you think that that's nonsense to give a child false illusions? It's the same thing as in terms of how we're living. I know this is one man's philosophy, but it goes back again to the austerity program in Greece. It all ties together. We have been misled into thinking we could have any amount of money, we could buy anything we want, we can go anywhere we want, buy it on credit, mortgage your house. You had to pay the piper, so the thing collapsed on you. The whole system came crashing down. And so now you're screaming, oh, someone did it to me. Bush did it to me. Obama did it to me. No, you did it to you because you live beyond your means. Bush didn't do it. Well, in a way, all the politicians kept feeding your fantasy that you could have it all, you know. Where did this come from, to mortgage a house in order to spend the money now? It's unheard of. To refi, running to Hawaii 18 times a year and buying bracelets, refi, they'll have no mortgage. They figure the house would keep going up and they wouldn't have to, you know, there's no need to pay the house off. It is so opposite from the way I see the world. When I grew up, again, it was unheard of. Nobody refinanced the house. That fiduciary instrument didn't even exist till some gonif came up with the idea. When the guy's paying off a mortgage, let him borrow against his own mortgage. Lend them more, keep him more in hock. No one ever heard of it. So again, it's a concept. It's a conceptualization, a different way of looking at the world. When I paid off a mortgage in one of my small houses, you know what? I framed the ownership paper. I actually took pleasure in knowing I paid off a house. I never thought I'd live to see that day, but I got to tell you something. You think about the word derived from the French mortgage. I used to joke about it when I first bought my house. I was a young man with young kids. Mortgage, death gauge. And I used to joke. I say to my friends when I was a youngster, I used to say, a young man, I say, it's a mortgage, a death gauge, which means by the time you pay it off, you usually drop dead within a few months. That's where the word mortgage came from. It was a death gauge. They calculated you lived just long enough to pay off the house so your wife could inherit it. And go gambling in a gambling casino. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Diddle, 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 diddle.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
So you look at the news of the week and you see that the vermin in the media are covering up the Gulf oil spill because it's clearly related to Obama's incompetence. The incompetence of Homeland Security, just as the Times Square bomber was Strike 4. Completely swept under the rug by the vermin in the media. What, it suddenly ended? The oil spill is over because the rats in the media decided to bury it? Imagine if it was a Republican president, what you'd be hearing from Al Gore. Where is Al Gore, by the way, with this oil spill? How come he's not saying a word? Today's secretary, spokesmouth Gibbs, or one of them, said it was the fault of the Bush administration. It's unbelievable to me. It's beyond comprehension when you see the puddles of white slime left on the floor of the White House press room after these supine conferences as they slither out. It's disgusting. It is just disgusting to see the white slimy snail tracks as the wolf blitzers of the world leave the White House press room. I mean, a little too graphic for you? It's too bad. That's why we have the trouble we have. That's the trouble we're in. Obama set to name Kagan to Supreme Court. Did you take a look at that prize? Ex-Harvard law dean, did you take a look at this one? It makes Cher Bono's daughter look feminine. I don't understand the country. This is like a freak show. It's like Ringling Brothers. Obama set to name Kagan to Supreme Court, says report. Ex-Harvard law dean. Beyond comprehension. It makes Cher Bono's daughter, this one, makes Cher Bono's daughter look feminine, to give you some idea of what we're going to have on the Supreme Court. It's like a laugh. If this was a laughing stock, if this was a laughing show, it would be funny. Her politics are worse than her appearance. Her appearance I could live with, but the politics actually don't even match the appearance. It's worse. They're worse. They're more grotesque than she is. Well, here we are. Gulf oil spill. 100-ton box position over undersea leak in effort to cap spill. Guess it's over because the slithering solenterates in the media have decided to bury it. Residents of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, Florida were still waiting to learn when the giant oil slick will reach the shore. It'll never reach the shore because you won't see it on the news. You'll never see it on the news. It won't be shown. Instead, they'll show some skirtless slut on her back in the streets of Hollywood as the role model for the children of America. San Francisco, Cal, you're on the Savage Nation.
Doctor, the reason why your devoted listeners are interested in what you had for dinner the evening before the show is simply because, well, let's face it, you never have a dull moment in a restaurant. It's either public or
Well, no, wait a minute. That's not true. I do eat, and nothing happens other than I eat.
Oh, but it's always about either some nasty, mean-looking cook with a cigarette out one side of his mouth staring at you, weird, and that's when the food is great. But when everybody's nice and everything's just right, the food is always terrible. So, you know, it's akin to a lot of what of us who frequent hospitality establishments also experience, particularly in the Bay Area. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yes. It's very difficult, except for the few restaurants I go to, and I know when to go. I avoid weekends, you know, for sure. You want to have a good meal, go on Monday night.
You get the place to yourself, huh?
You got the place to yourself, and the food is usually purchased Monday morning. Everybody knows that in the restaurant business. Monday night, Tuesday night's nice. But that's not what most... I mean, most people work. They don't have the time to go to dinner on Monday or Tuesday night. So when you go out in San Francisco, Cal, do you find people rude? Do you find the waiters hostile or what?
Most of the time, San Francisco, for as popular as the tourist trade that they claim to have, service is pretty, for the most part, it's pretty low rated. I give it a very low mark, a D minus all the way around, especially out here in Marin County where both of us live.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started on Marin County. It's why I really only eat in San Francisco and in the two places I mentioned, the two kings of Italian, the Aliotto's and North Beach. Because, they know me, so they treat me well. That is absolutely true. But they're nice people. They're genuinely nice people. You know what I found in restaurants? Unless there's a patron at the door, I won't go in there. I don't care where I am in the country. There has to be, like, an owner, or let's say a first-class manager who is a de facto representative of the owner, who makes you feel at home and welcomes you, or else the food, to me, is never right. There has to be someone who really cares about what they're serving and watches like a hawk. you know what restaurants are like. If they start to ignore every plate has to be looked at, or they will slide very rapidly. Don't you think, Cal?
Well, now, every rule has an exception, though, because I took to heart the story you told about the Chinese place. I'm thinking it might be the same place I went, where you go to, it's just a family, and they look at you like you don't belong there, and they hate you, and they'll serve you because they have to.
If you, you don't mean out, you don't mean out in the avenues where it looks like Pol Pot's brother is the owner, right?
If you sit kindly.
Yeah, he sits behind the counter. He glowers at you. I feel like in a movie set for like a Vietnam-era movie of like a prison camp. And he's the guard up in the tower staring down with hate. That's the restaurant, that one?
That's the one. If you promise to sit in the corner and not make any noise and don't order anything that's...
Now, wait a minute. You don't mean... I'm not going to specify. You don't mean on Geary Street, do you?
Of course, yes.
Yes. Now, I mean, the food used to be great, but they have a new trick. Whatever you order, they bring the rice after the food. You're eating the food and there's no rice. Every time it's the same thing. You have to say, where's the rice? Like they never heard about rice coming with the food? Have you noticed that little gimmick?
I didn't. I'll be paying attention for sure next time.
Oh, you mean you get rice with your food from Pol Pot? How did you arrange that?
All I know is I just feel lucky. I get in and out of there and eat without getting hurt.
Well, one of the things I don't like, I used to love it because the food was really the best. The clay pot cookery was the best, but they got so arrogant. They got lazy. You know, they start raking it in and the white people all bow when they go in. It's mainly the university crowd from UC Med Center. Every one of them bows, and going to have a glass of water. Oh, thank you. 80 times thank you for a glass of water and a napkin. I mean, after 10 years of that, what you start doing is you spit at the people who come in. You look down at them like they're morons. What are they thanking the owner for? He's in business to serve you a glass of water and a napkin.
Hey, well, before you get to the top of the hour, we got to know, did Teddy freak out when you showed him a picture of the Labradoodle?
The Labradoodle. No, there's a neighbor's Labradoodle that barks at Teddy. But Teddy is a very well-balanced, good-natured little boy, and he doesn't bark back. He looks at him like he's crazy. He figures it's a product of bad breeding. Real poodles don't snarl. Real poodles don't snarl. They just lift their heads and walk away. Oh, I've had a lot of fun so far today. Why? Why is this man laughing? Because if you stop laughing, you're a dead man. You're a dead man already. There's so many amazing stories I could have told you today to get you agitated. I didn't. I just avoided them. I just absolutely avoided. Who will Obama pick to replace Justice Stevens on the Supreme Court? Well, you got to look at the mugshot of this one. You're not going to believe it. It's a good thing they don't televise the hearings. That's all I can say. Is that up for a review that they're going to start televising Supreme Court hearings, Beowulf? Because, I mean, this could kill it altogether. I'm glad they don't televise Supreme Court hearings. If Kagan goes on the court, please, I never want to see the hearings. Oh, she'll push the people around. She'll make Ruth Bader Ginsburg look like a Girl Scout, this one. I can guarantee you they'll be intimidated by her. And, no, the bottom line is, if she gets on the Supreme Court, I can't wait to see the charade of the false Republicans lifting their skirts and curtsying around her, making her, you know, ushering her right in like they did Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This one's unqualified. This one is an extremist. This one's a biased one. This one is a far-left radical just like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, unqualified at any speed. Unqualified at any speed. You cannot pick a judge who is this biased, okay? Unqualified at any speed. Forget how she looks.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Athens exploded today as tens of thousands of people took to the streets. Demonstrators set several buildings ablaze, including a bank in which three people were killed. Greek workers are angry about tough new austerity measures, calling for a cut in state salaries, a cut in pensions, and new taxes. The government says the measures are necessary in order to avoid bankruptcy.
The big story today, of course, is Greece. The Dow swinging 10,000, the Dow Jones average swinging 1,010 points, the second largest in history. No one knows if somebody hacked the system. No one knows if it was a bad trade. We do know that there were riots in Greece because the Greek bums do not want to go to work. They want to collect government checks. And the fact of the matter is, this is going to spread throughout Europe and probably come ashore here once the Obamas realize that they cannot follow Greece. Remember, this is a government of Obama. This Obama government is running on a model that Greece has been following, and Spain has been following, and England's been following, which is cradle-to-grave government care. And they're bankrupt. That's what I've been trying to tell you now for years. Well, I don't think this will have any effect whatsoever on Obama because he's never run a hot dog stand, unlike the man who stopped the Times Square bomber, who did run a hot dog stand. Speaking of the bomber and things of that nature, it's astounding what's been going on in the media. CNN's Wolf Blitzer, one of the lowest of the Salenterites in the media, was concerned today about not Islamofascism, not how to extract information from Islamofascists after they're caught, not how to get rid of the sleeper cells in our nation. No. Wolf Blitzer, the lowest of the low Salenterites, did a piece on CNN about what causes these vermin to become terrorists and how we in America are blamed for it. He asked if U.S. drone attacks in Pakistan were breeding more terrorists. He then asked if the Times Square bomber was upset because he was oppressed by the West. Then he asked what his specific motive was. It's unbelievable what's going on in this country. Here in the United States of America, in San Francisco, in a neighboring school district on this Cinco de Mayo day, some kids, some of whom are part Hispanic, came in wearing American flag T-shirts. A communist teacher made them take off their American flag T-shirts in the United States of America, because it was insensitive to the illegal alien children. And you wonder if we have traitors running America. Well, keep wondering. Keep wondering. It's been a year now since I, Michael Savage, was banned from entering Britain. I'm still banned, and one of the greatest travesties in the recent history of Western democracy is still taking place. Here's a BBC reporter talking to the British Bolshevik who did this to me, who's since been kicked out, Jackie Smith.
So among those excluded, two leaders of a violent Russian skinhead gang, a former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard and a neo-Nazi, but also a radio talk show host. Isn't that sort of suppressing freedom of speech in a sense?
Well, I have to say, this radio talk show host isn't your sort of Terry Wogan type character by any means. This is somebody who has fallen into the category of fomenting hatred, of such extreme views and expressing them in such a way that it's actually likely to cause inter-community tension or even violence if that person were allowed into the country.
And here's my response.
I be linked with known murderers, people who have been put in prison for years for killing people, people who espouse the overthrow of your government openly, when I am simply speaking, talking for 15 years on the radio, writing best-selling books. It was shocking to believe this is coming out of England, a country I've always loved and admired, specifically for its freedoms.
Of course, the Home Secretary, Jackie Smith, has said that the reason you were banned is because the things that you say foment hatred, engaging people in spreading hatred as well. What do you say to the reasons behind the ban?
Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. There are millions of people who agree with me, not only in America but around the world. Now, you can take sound bites from an individual and turn them into anything you want. But if you actually listen to what I said about these things, it might be a different individual that you're hearing.
It contains A to Z natural approaches for natural complaints. I wrote it. Healing Children Naturally, only available on michaelsavage.com. So let's have some rock and roll while we're playing. So let's have some more rock and roll.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel.
Other top stories on michaelsavage.com. The latest Navy SEAL acquitted from false charges. A Brooklyn postal carrier was caught with sacks of undelivered mail, cops say. Former Giants star Lawrence Taylor arrested for alleged rape with a 16-year-old. Jokes about a TSA scanner's private parts led to a brutal beating. They ran him through a scanner to practice, and they saw that he had small genitals, and they laughed at him, so he beat them up in the parking lot. I guess, well, we'll let it go with that. That's it from MichaelSavage.com.
Savage.
It is time for the Savage Nation Week in Review. We started the week with a clip from the White House correspondence. Then listen.
Good evening again. Thank you all for coming. Everybody in this room is very special tonight as far as I'm concerned. There are just three special women in this audience whose love and support I feel every single day. And I'd like to just acknowledge Helen Ferguson of Sterling, Virginia, my mother-in-law, Nancy Chan of Portland, Oregon, my mother, and my darling wife, Meredith, who is the light of my life and with whom I'll be celebrating a 35th anniversary this year. Thank you all. And I would be remiss not to recognize the product of this happy union, Matthew Chan of Houston, Texas.
Next, we have Homeland Insecurity patting themselves on their back for catching the Times Square bomber, even though it was a hot dog salesman.
I'd like to thank the dedicated men and women of the Department of Homeland Security, whose work on the case was instrumental in apprehending this suspect. Customs and Border Protection successfully apprehended the suspect after its agents and analysts had been tracking outbound flights for a potential suspect for the past 3 days. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents served an important role in the Joint Terrorism Task Force in New York as the lead law enforcement agency on the international aspects of the investigation, interviewing witnesses and running down leads.
Here is the plane turning around.
Airmark 202, Heavy Kennedy, Tower, runway 22, right position. Actually, I have a message for you to go back to the gate immediately, so make the left turn when able.
202, turning left here.
Hi, Airmark 202, make the left turn onto Echo, left Alpha, back to the ramp. I don't know exactly why, but you can call your company for the reason.
We'll do that. Left onto Echo, then onto Alpha, and back to the gate.
Now the press tries to blame white males and those in the tea parties.
That they have a person of interest as a naturalized American citizen returned to the country after spending several months in Pakistan. Is it too early to read into that?
No, I still think the jury is out on this. I think it could be a right-wing militiaman involved in this. I mean, you never know.
I think, yes, 25 cents. This would be exactly that. Somebody who's
homegrown,
maybe a mentally deranged person or somebody with a political agenda that doesn't like the health care bill or something. It could be anything.
Wait, there's more.
Who is that guy and what's he doing? They want to talk to this man. The video shows a middle-aged white man changing his shirt.
A person of interest, a white man said to be in his 40s.
Do you know this man? A surveillance video shows a middle-aged white man changing his shirt just about a half block from where the SUV was abandoned.
The possible suspect, described as a white male appearing to be in his mid-40s.
This person of interest, they say, who's a white man in his 40s, they think, who is seen not far from the vehicle changing shirts.
The guy in the video seen here is described as a white male in his 40s. He's seen stopping to take off a sweatshirt.
The NYPD is now searching for somebody they describe to be a white male believed to be in his 40s.
Somebody
who's homegrown,
maybe a mentally deranged person or somebody with a political agenda.
Middle-aged white man.
White man said to be in his 40s.
Middle-aged white man.
White male in his 40s.
Is a white male in his mid-40s.
White male believed to be in his 40s. White man in his 40s, they think.
Do you know this man?
Can you believe this?
When he returned from Pakistan, he underwent some kind of secondary screening after his last trip, and that contributed in some way to his arrest. Why was he screened when he came back, and what was learned?
Without getting into a lot of detail, he was screened when he came back because some of the targeting rules applied. He was subjected to secondary screening. He is a naturalized U.S. citizen, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Here is Reverend Franklin Graham after being disinvited to the White House, where apparently only Ramadan is permitted.
A couple of Muslims and one fellow in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who hates everything that we Christians stand for. They objected to us having a prayer service at the Pentagon. And Campbell, I've spoken at the Pentagon before 9/11 and since 9/11. I've spoken for chaplains all across this country for the Pentagon to rescind this invitation. I think is a slap towards evangelicals and Christians as a whole.
And here's the media blaming the right wing, even after they caught the Muslim bomber.
And the fact is that whether this the guy who did this or the people who did this were with some Islamic terrorist group or whether they were some right-wing nut group or whether they were by themselves, in one sense, it doesn't matter.
It could be right-wing domestic terrorists, but right-wing domestic terrorists tend to attack U.S. government buildings. They attack abortion clinics. They attack synagogues. They view the American people, look at the American government as the enemy, not the American people.
You could easily find out that this was someone who was either had a right-wing agenda or was mentally disturbed. Or
how do you deal with these types of crimes without resulting in racism effectively towards people of Pakistani or Middle Eastern descent?
I want to make clear that we will not tolerate any bias or backlash against Pakistani or Muslim New Yorkers.
Listen to this savage audio clip.
Shahzad's motive also remains unclear. He's told interrogators he's upset with U.S. policies, which he feels unfairly target Muslims. And he's angry over predator strikes that have killed both terror leaders and civilians in his native Pakistan. Investigators say a quest for revenge seems to have played some role. But personal financial pressures may also have pushed Shahzad to act. He became a U.S. citizen just a year ago, but he has not realized any American dream. He quit his job, lost his house, and was separated from his family.
And here's media reaction on the Greek riots to the stock market crash.
Athens exploded today as tens of thousands of people took to the streets. Demonstrators set several buildings ablaze, including a bank in which three people were killed. Greek workers are angry about tough new austerity measures, calling for a cut in state salaries, a cut in pensions, and new taxes. The government says the measures are necessary in order to avoid bankruptcy.
Feels and looks like a panic.
We're looking at these riot police.
We're looking at the Dow now. It's down some 400 points.
And it was chaos there.
They turned extremely violent.
It's gone down 400, double that, just within the last couple of minutes.
And some of these very same images were being seen by some of the traders on Wall Street.
From very early on in the day, we saw that the government was prepared for something much more serious.
Because we are falling fast and furiously.
Down 845 points.
I want to show this confrontation.
Look at these numbers. Down and down 962 points.
Down now 400 points.
So somebody hits the wrong button.
Yeah,
on a trading desk.
The wrong button on a trading desk, and all of us are automatically worried.
Take an Excedrin. You're going to need it. Maybe a little something else to chase it with. What a day. And we're going to still try to figure this thing out.
And now, the Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
These drone attacks, I assume they're effective, but do they breed more terrorists as a result of these attacks? What makes someone radicalized? What makes someone who's maybe a little bit angry all of a sudden become a terrorist? Now, what's the bottom line in this process? This was an educated individual, this suspect. It wasn't some poor, ignorant suicide bomber, if you will. It was someone who came from a fairly affluent background. What have you heard about a possible specific motive other than just, let's say, hatred of America?
Can you believe it's been 1 year since I was banned in Britain?
I was shocked, angered. How in the world could I be linked with known murderers, people who have been put in prison for years for killing people, people who espouse the overthrow of your government openly? when I am simply speaking, talking for 15 years on the radio, writing best-selling books, it was shocking to believe this is coming out of England, a country I've always loved and admired, specifically for its freedoms.
Of course, the Home Secretary, Jackie Smith, has said that the reason you were banned is because the things that you say foment hatred, engaging people in spreading hatred as well. What do you say to the reasons behind the ban?
Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. There are millions of people who agree with me, not only in America, but around the world. Now, you can take sound bites from an individual and turn them into anything you want. But if you actually listen to what I said about these things, it might be a different individual that you're hearing. I don't know which show Jackie heard or when she heard it, but I'm not broadcast in England. So obviously she was given some selected sound bites by individuals who detest my points of view and are trying to skewer me. That's not freedom of speech, nor is that fair. The issue is that in America, the First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech. We don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech, do we? I mean, everyone engages in polite speech. What do we need protections for? It's speech which provokes thought that is considered offensive and hateful by those who disagree with you, isn't it? And so, therefore, it's only speech we're talking about, not the acts of murderers. And to lump me in with murderers is defaming me. It's libeling me.
That's it for our Savage Review of the Week. Savage. It is Friday, and here's James Hurston with a report on the shenanigans going on in Hollywood.
This weekend, beleaguered Americans will flock to the multiplex and to get away from all this terrible news about the way our country is being moved farther and farther leftward. And to provide an outlet, Paramount and Marvel are releasing the sequel to Iron Man. It's aptly called Iron Man 2 and will be shown on 4,000 screens. The movie has already taken in more than $100 million from foreign distribution. Oh, the movie is, shall we say, a little bit predictable. Unlike Superman or Batman, the world is aware that billionaire inventor Tony Stark, played by Robert Downey Jr., is the armored superhero Iron Man, under pressure from the government, the press, and the public to share his technology with the military. Tony is unwilling to tell the secrets behind the Iron Man armor because he fears the information will slip into the wrong hands, maybe terrorists. So a new crop of villains attack Iron Man, and he must be boosted by Pepper Potts, that's Gwyneth Paltrow's character, and James Rhodey Rhodes, that's Don Cheadle's character. I mean, Iron Man, you have to be cautious with the little ones. It's rated PG-13. It has some scenes of intense action and violence and a little bit of profanity. And the movie does what sequels from Hollywood often do. It overcomplicates the plot. There are too many new characters and too many storylines. But it's still entertaining, and the end result, even though it's not as fresh or well-paced as the first Iron Man, guess what? It will be number one at the box office this weekend. It'll break records. It'll provide escapist entertainment to an American public who really needs it.
True.
The movie business is a very risky enterprise, and so when it comes to originality, Hollywood execs are insecure creatures. So we are bombarded with sequels and remakes. Believe it or not, Hollywood is bringing back Godzilla.
No.
Again. Seems like it was only yesterday. Roland Emmerich came out with a version of Godzilla. It was 1998, I think, and it flopped. But now Legendary Pictures and Warner Brothers want to bring back that overgrown lizard and have announced a new Godzilla remake in development for a 2012 release. Now, the new version they think will be okay because it will be in 3D. Speaking of movie characters that are bigger than life, as actor Johnny Depp was leaving an L.A. recording studio with a friend. The friend was approached by a guy brandishing a broken bottle. He was seeking to rob Depp's buddy. The actor looked at the would-be mugger and told him to back off.
Hmm.
The guy who wanted to be a criminal squinted. All of a sudden, he recognized Depp, and he said, "I ain't stealing from Captain Jack." That's Depp's character in Pirates of the Caribbean. And he put his broken bottle down. You know, Depp gave him a few bucks, told him to straighten up his life. It's funny how the movies just permeate real life, even to the point when people who would be criminals stop their crimes with star power in their face. But speaking of these kinds of realistic things, in today's movies, filmmakers, some of them, strive for realism. But a New York cop was responding to a 911 call about a robbery in progress, and he came upon what looked exactly like a robbery in progress. The scene was a guy. He was in a convenience store called the Cool Stop, and he had a gun. And the gun was aimed at the store's owner. The officer yelled, "Police, drop the gun." He burst into the store. The startled guy holding the gun threw his hands in the air and cried, "It's a movie! It's a movie!" The firearm turned out to be a prop. And this independent filmmaker, Fred Carpenter, and his crew were filming a movie scene from the rear of the store with a high-def camera. When police arrived, there were no production trucks or movie lights or any signs of a film, and so they thought it was real. Realism. The opposite of realism is a cartoon, and especially the cartoon series on Comedy Central. Remember, Comedy Central was the network that recently edited South Park's images and references to Muhammad.
Right, right, right.
However, the Comedy Central Network, when it comes to their programming, it all depends upon which religion.
Why do you say that?
The network is developing an animated series about Jesus.
What?
Honest to God. It features an animated son of God who is attempting to escape his overbearing father. His father is the creator of the universe. The Comedy Central version of Christ is constantly playing video games and lives his life in New York City. The series will be produced by the same people that work on the television series The Office. That's going to make people mighty mad.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of making people angry, Seth MacFarlane loves to tick people off with his Family Guy series on the same network on Comedy Central. Family Guy is thumbing its animated nose at the FCC regulations, with a scene in its latest episode involving the family dog's culinary habits and the contents of the baby character Stewie's diaper.
I'm sick of this.
I can't even tell you the details. And the FCC has received complaints about the show, and they ought to investigate. Maybe the FCC would get involved if Lindsay Lohan's new movie is broadcast anywhere but in certain theaters or on the web or in adult stores, because Lohan, who's been in the news for living on the edge and going in and out of rehab, is now reportedly taking a starring role to portray a 1970s porn star, probably the most famous porn star, Linda Lovelace.
Oh, my God.
The biopic is titled Inferno. Leave it to Hollywood to do a biography of a porn star.
Crazy.
And Bill Pullman has been cast in the movie as Hugh Hefner. And this is all part of something that is unique to our time, the mainstreaming of porn and porn stars, which continues in the media. And it's affected the porn industry. They're living a delusion. They think what they do is just fine. Because look, it's shown by a response to a problem that they have in their industry right now. The entire entertainment industry is increasingly concerned about public perceptions of illegal downloading. You know, what we also call internet piracy. But a new attempt to influence attitudes about the piracy problem has taken the form of a series of videos. And it features a very unlikely set of spokespersons from the porn industry. In fact, they are porn stars. Let's get this straight. The adult entertainment industry is preaching about the wrongdoing of those who are downloading porn without paying for it. But they apparently see no problem with having sexual relations on camera for cash.
Well, you talk about a classic double standard.
The anti-piracy sermonizing arrives via headshots of porn stars giving their reprimands to would-be porn pirates. They say things like, quote, "If you made your living selling something, you wouldn't want people to steal it just because they can," close quote. They call themselves the Adult Entertainment Trade Association. That's a nice euphemism. And they plan a series of videos to show how piracy hurts people who are employed in porn production. Why are they doing this? Well, maybe it's because the industry is fearful of the same thing that's happening to the music business and that torpedoed the film business and has film studio executives shaking in their Italian sneakers. Falling DVD sales, plummeting DVD sales because of piracy. You know, it's amazing that people who would get in front of a camera, have real intimate sexual relations for money, would turn around and point the finger and say, some kid that's downloading something, that they're doing something wrong. The Adult Entertainment Trade Association. Well, thanks, Michael, for providing real adult entertainment. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks for the report, James.
Savage.
When it comes to the right, the mainstream media always says we are wrong and fearmongers and the party of no. It looks like already things we talked about with the horrendous Obama health care bill that they passed are coming true. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Michael Tanner, whose recent article, Fearmongers Were Right About Obamacare, and he talks about this. Michael Tanner, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be on today.
But what do you mean that fearmongers were right about Obamacare?
Well, Obamacare has only been law for about a month, and already we're finding out that many of the things that people warned about it are actually true. It would have been a great thing if the media had told us this before they voted, but we are finding out, for example, this bill is going to cost more than we were told it would. The chief actuary of the government, Richard Foster, has come forward with a new study suggesting this is going to increase healthcare spending in the U.S. by about $350 billion over 10 years, when we were told that this was going to reduce healthcare spending. This is going to raise premiums, especially for young and healthy people. A new study by the RAND Corporation suggests that young people could end up paying 17% more under this bill than they would have if we had not passed healthcare reform at all. And we're going to find out that somewhere around 10 to 12 million Americans are going to lose their current health insurance, many of them being pushed into the Medicaid system, and others being forced to go out on these new exchanges when they're set up and buy their health insurance there. This is exactly what opponents of the bill predicted, but we were all told that we were all right-wing nuts.
Well, what happened to the lower costs that Pelosi lied about?
Well, it's really strange because this information was really available if anyone paid attention to it. The Congressional Budget Office warned us that if we didn't pass health care reform, health insurance premiums were going to double in the next 6 to 10 years, and the president went out and hammered that again and again. What he didn't mention was that the Congressional Budget Office also said that if we passed this bill, health insurance premiums were going to double in the next 6 to 10 years, that this bill wasn't going to do anything to change that. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there that are going to be very shocked when they open their insurance bill next year and find it's gone up. After all, when he was campaigning, the president said he was going to save us all $2,500 on our health insurance bill. He's not.
How about the reported fines? They said we're not there.
Well, in fact, the Congressional Budget Office just released its latest report and suggests that about 4 million people will get hit with fines for not complying with the health insurance mandate, and the average fine will be about $1,000 per person. These fines begin in 2014. They're 1% of income in that year, 2% of income the next year, and 2.5% after that. They're going to hit people pretty hard.
So where do we go from here?
Well, I certainly think that the fight over this bill is far from over. I think that every candidate, a Republican candidate, is going to be running on repeal the bill this fall. Unfortunately, the reality is this bill is going to be very hard to repeal. Even if the Republicans were to take over Congress, they're not going to have 60 votes in the Senate to overcome a Democratic filibuster, and suddenly filibusters will be okay again. They're not going to have two-thirds votes, certainly, to overcome a presidential veto. But there are things that they could do if the Republicans were to take the House, for example. The House controls the purse strings. They could refuse to fund large portions of this bill. This bill, for example, includes money to hire new IRS agents, or actually the government's coming back to request money to hire new IRS agents to enforce the provisions of this bill. A Republican-controlled House could refuse to fund them. There's lots of aspects to this they could do, pull the plug. I think that this is a good lesson for us as we start looking at some of these other proposals that are coming down. You know, every time the president or the Democrats in Congress put forward some sweeping proposal, whether it's health care reform or now financial regulation, pretty soon it's going to be energy or immigration or whatever it is, when people raise objections, we're told that we're just fear-mongering, that we're just saying no. Maybe we should listen to some of those fears, because certainly with the health care bill, it was proven to be right.
Michael Tanner, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's been a real pleasure as always.
Here's an interesting story about dogs. The creator of the Labradoodle has massive regrets over the craze he started. Did you know about that? Is your mixed breed a mistake of monumental proportions, or the crowning achievement of thousands of years of thoughtful, selective breeding? The man who made the Labradoodle, who has now seen millions of Labradoodles across the planet, says that the massive craze has caused him great regret. He says, "I don't regret the dog, not for the purpose I bred it for. I regret all the people who got on the bandwagon willy-nilly, people who are breeding poodle crosses for the money, who have no concern for parentage." How was Conran to know that by crossing one of his kennel's best labs with a standard poodle, he would unwittingly spark an international trend that would spawn the schnoodle, the groodle, the roodle, and countless other similar designer breeds? See, I don't have a schmoodle or a croodle or a moodle or a labradoodle. I have a poodle poodle. His name is Teddy. He's purebred. He's a champion. I have nothing against crossbred dogs. I own mutts most of my life. But let me tell you something. There's a limit to crossbreeding when it comes to champions. And the Labradoodle, in my opinion, is too much for me.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail.
Did you see how the media went nuts when they found what they called a suspicious object in Times Square? The police and the cable channels started running around like a bunch of chickens without heads.
We have just been told that part of Times Square, that the traffic has been shut down due to a suspicious package.
And right there in front of the Marriott Marquis, what is going on?
We're told that there's a suspicious package by the Marriott Marquis.
This appears to be, I'm not sure this is Times Square. This is Times Square, that's right. This is Times Square.
I think they're taking every precaution to make sure it's nothing, or to make sure it's something.
And then the bomb squad has to come out, and then all heck breaks loose.
It turned out that it was just a lunch cooler with bottled water in it that someone had left behind. And here's Nancy Pelosi being asked whether she's in favor of sealing the border.
The Justice Department has reported that one in five teenagers used illicit drugs last year and that most of those drugs came across the border from Mexico. Are you committed to sealing the border against the influx of illegal drugs?
Well, if your question is about drugs, I'm for reducing demand in the United States. That is what our responsibility is on this subject.
So she's in favor of illegals coming in and bringing in their contraband? Unbelievable. Number of U.S. soldiers seeking opiate abuse treatment skyrockets.
Jesus.
Take a look at the pictures of a rapist. Rapist smirks, then cries after sentenced to 12 years. Take a look at the big shot. Then take a look at the world's richest moms, the billionaires. And on the bottom right of michaelsavage.com, see a picture of the Times Square bomber in his holy robes as he gets ready to marry his doe-eyed bride at their lavish wedding in Pakistan. All on michaelsavage.com. Don't miss it.
Savage.